before we even knew what the crew thing was, it always came from this like this code and this ethic and this like respect for community.
This is the Longest Stride Podcast. Join us as we connect the boroughs of the GTA running community, one stride at a time.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Greenwald. On behalf of my co-host, Andre Morgan, welcome to the Longest Stride Podcast. Before we introduce today's guest, Andre and I would just like to thank everyone for downloading and sharing our episode the past 6 months. By the time this airs, it'll be, I think, December 31st. How fitting. End of year, season one, with today's guest we're really excited about. We didn't know what to expect when we started this podcast, but we did know we want to talk to everyone in the running community, and we're just getting started. So thanks again for your support. Stay tuned because we have a few ideas to make this next year even better. Speaking of community and our amazing community, it's still hard to imagine it really started about 10 years ago. To be clear, groups like Toronto Olympic Club were founded in 1954. They're already on the scene. But we're talking about run crews, really grassroots run crews where everyday runners can run with the high-performance runners and feel like they're part of the same team or crew, and even train together. It's only fitting that we would close out season one of the Longest Stride by inviting someone who's responsible for putting Toronto on the map and kicking off the groundswell of running crews who make our running community the best in the world. Our words, not his, so he might agree. We're thrilled, so thrilled to welcome Mike Krupicka to the Longest Stride.
Thank you. What an intro. I was just about to say, please don't say those are my words because, man, we're so Canadian. I think the whole group is way too humble to say anything that kind about ourselves. So I appreciate you saying that.
Someone's got to own it.
And that's why they make the Americans sometimes do the intro because then, you know, we don't get blamed as Canadians, right? So.
I just got to own it, right? And just go on it. Welcome, Mike. It's going to be awesome to just get to dive in and find out how Parkdale Roadrunners started. So that's my first question to you. How did it all start?
It all started as some people will say it's a bet. Some will say it's a joke. I think it's a bit of both. But it started with a bet between friends of who could run the most in a month. And there was four of us, and none of us were, one was a runner, the others weren't runners. And by the end of it, there were two people left, and we had this big unveil. This is when everybody was going on, like just tracking through the Nike Plus at the time. So we weren't logging that night so that the other people couldn't see how many kilometers were logging towards the end. So we would just like upload once a week, and then you're like, shit, now I gotta run. And that really kicked off of like, oh, I guess we're kind of running. And out of a cafe that I owned at the time, we made shirts that said, I'd rather be smoking. And the back said, the Mascot Running Club, as a complete joke to go alongside with this bet. And we gave it, I think we made like six or seven, gave them to a couple of friends that were running quite a bit. And people would stop us along the lakeshore and be like, what's this run club thing? Or come into the cafe and ask our staff, like, when does the run club? So that turned into like forcing our hand to start a run club. And that was, oh gosh, October, 10 years ago. We just had our 10-year anniversary this past, we celebrated in November. So yeah, that was like the lid, like that's the spark of how it started, but like it blew up from there. I guess over the course of 10 years in a relatively short period of time.
That's amazing. Were you one of the runners in the group?
Yeah, it's funny. So I won the challenge, and what I won from it was an iPad. That iPad is like dead, done, and dusted, but it's still in my like closet because on the back of it says congratulations. So that like that's my official medal as a runner is that iPad, and it's a brick.
It's a brick, and it's an unofficial kind of launch of PDRR, right? So like that's like a marker of kind of when things started.
Yeah, so that was That was the mascot running club, which then fed into PDRR. So what we ended up doing was, while the cafe was still opening, we switched it to be more representative of the neighborhood and not just the location that we were running out of. It was an idea that Stephen Arterby, my partner who started it with me, who I need to credit right off the bat, because even in your introduction, I think as I cannot take credit for what Parkdale has done and where it's come from without him being my partner. It's like 100%. And what he did, you know, after Parkdale has been pretty remarkable as well with Bond and everything. But I need to just like get that clear and out, because some of the things that he's done along the way, and even just having that insight of like, let's change it and make it representative of the community, was very instrumental in how we were able to move going forward. And even the way we opened the cafe was for the community. We called it the mascot because it's been about 15 years ago now. There was nothing really that was like anchoring or driving people to Parkdale at that time. It was still pretty shady. There was no Grand Electrics or Sam James or any of that stuff that's in the neighborhood now. And this was like that other, like that flag of like, we want to champion our neighborhood. And that's where the Parkdale Pilgrims came.
That's amazing. And please drop names, because, you know, it takes a village sometimes or a crew to be successful, right? So, you know, whether it be Steve or anyone else that was part of that, please let us have it, because, you know, we're fortunate enough to have you here, but we know that that you had help and you had some good friends to encourage you along the way. So so keep them coming. Mike, at the time, I don't know what, you know, maybe it's a different way of asking it, but like, what was the scene like back then? Because, you know, when we spoke to Heather a few weeks ago, and she was talking about when she started running with Lulu, and when she was starting at the Time Tribe, she's like, you know, no one was really on a scene. Like, Night Terror started right before us, but Parkdale was around. So for someone to say Parkdale was around, it's going to be hard for you to say that other people around before you. So like, how's the idea, and you kind of walked us through the mascot and kind of the competition, but how does something like Parkdale even like come to be, or even the mascot come to be, when there's nothing around to really reference? Did you look outside Toronto, maybe elsewhere, for inspiration to start a run crew? Or was your idea, just get a few friends together, we'll call ourselves a run crew?
So it's interesting time to have this interview, because over the past month or two since we've done our 10-year anniversary or what was supposed to be our 10-year anniversary, I've had a lot of time to reflect on that. And what I feel kind of answers that question the simplest way was that it comes from the subcultures that we belonged to. So it wasn't about looking at what anybody else was doing, because it took us about a year and a half to even know that there was a thing called run crews. Until Instagram came along and we jumped on that. We didn't know about, I think the first one Steven told me about was bridge runners. He was like, yo, do you know there's dudes in New York that like run across bridges? Boom, on a flight, New York. I was like, what the hell is going on here? And I'll tell that story in time, but like, welcome with open arms, and they're still family to this day. But like, that was the spark of like, oh, there's other people in the world that are doing similar things. But for us, it was, even like going back to the cafe bit, was we wanted a place where we could kind of have a clubhouse that we never had growing up as teenagers. So both Steven and I came from, we were both graffiti writers, so just simple as that.
Oh, yeah.
And then we kind of moved in different music scenes as well. And he played like live music. I was kind of back in the day, like doing a lot of like underground hip hop photography and things like that. So like, there was the codes and rules we moved through stemmed from that like subculture and those morals. So when the whole crew thing came up, before we even knew what the crew thing was, it always came from this like this code and this ethic and this like respect for community. So it was very inherent, because we had been a part of these communities in different ways, skateboarding, all of these things that have similar values. And we just brought that into this little kind of thing that was just sparking off of, we knew we were changing our lives for the better just through some choices we were making in terms of, you know, how we were spending our evenings, let's say that. And running was changing that for us. And we knew we could use that to, without knowing it, we knew we could use it to like to bring this vibe and this energy and harness it in a way for under the running umbrella.
Yeah, and it's interesting you've put it together just in recent times, because you still had to look back, because I feel like the crew has formed into more of like have softer edges now. Do you think there was a rebel mentality initially when you all started to go at it?
I'm gonna answer your question with a question. I just want you to clarify, what do you mean by softer edges? I'm curious. That's like a very interesting way to word something. I'm curious what that means.
So here's my picture of it. The initial kickoff was, as you said, there is there is skateboarding, graffiti writing. So it's almost like there's a rebel mentality there, and then that makes it with the edginess of like, hey, let's just run and have a clubhouse. So I could see that being, we're just doing the stuff that we enjoy. But no, I see Parkdale as we could make collaboration with actual brands. So that's what I meant by softer edges. You know, it stems from the shirt that said, I'd rather be smoking. I'm sure that would be a shirt that I'd want to wear now, only because of just the alignment of, no, it's more into the health conscious space, yeah. Let's say. So that's what I meant by soft edges.
Yeah, no, and that's a great clarification. Thank you. I think in a strange way, I will agree and disagree, because I do think with maturity and evolution comes different opportunities. So mm-hmm. For example, when we were doing these shirts with our friend who happened to have a print shop behind the cafe, who still prints all of our shirts to this day. It was a very much do-it-yourself type of like, hardcore punk type of mentality of like, nobody's going to do this, we're just going to do it type of thing. And now with that, with the evolution and the maturity and, you know, working, we've been lucky enough to have brand partnerships over the years and, or being able to do brand collaborations, the Tracksmiths, the CLEs, the things like that, that I think that's just an evolution, and that's stepping up the quality of the game. We will still go back and do, and by the time this podcast comes out, we will have another new shirt coming out any day now. So we're still doing it ourselves, but there's different opportunities that come up to be able to do things on another level.
Got it. Yeah, that clears it up for me. It's not that there's change or you stagnate or it's different. It's no, just conforming to what's available. You know, the low hanging fruits, or you know, maybe some of these brands didn't exist before. Obviously not.
Yeah, and I would say taking advantage of opportunities that present themselves is maybe a different way of saying it. Whereas 10 years ago, brands weren't looking to being like, hey, we're going to give you X amount of units and you can do whatever you want with them type of thing. It was like, you know, it was, brands weren't paying attention to us in the slightest bit. And that was completely fine, because we had it. Like we were going to do this and it didn't matter. And I think that's when it was a lot, the community and the culture was a lot purer, because I've, not to go down a different tangent, but I think I've seen a lot of things come up over the years where the intention stems from a very different place. It's about recognition and not building community.
I'm just curious, and I don't want to jump way too far ahead, but this is going to help me out with the next question is the crew open to anyone that wants to join? I know COVID rules, et cetera, but like when things were cool, could anyone join you guys?
Yeah, that was always
perfect.
Rain or shine, on time, no one left behind was always the motto.
Love it.
And yeah, that was the most important thing, because we weren't runners when we started. So that, like, we became runners. We set goals and we trained for things, and you know, we were able to accomplish some feats that I would never even like you know, we did the second year of Speed Project and running through, you know, Death Valley. I never would have imagined that would have been even, again, been an opportunity for us to take. You know, we've traveled around the world. We had a gang of our group go down to do Comrades last year. So, you know, there's been a lot of really cool things that have come up from it that I don't know that would have presented itself had we not been open to everyone.
Yeah, ideas and new ways and stuff. That's amazing. And the only reason why I asked is because of my actual question, which takes us back a little bit. So what was it like when, because you started with Steve, you started with your friends, and then you start realizing, okay, this is maybe bigger than us, because now you have people that you may not know personally that are coming out to run with you all. What was that initial feeling like where it's like, okay, we actually, there's something going on here. It's not just a few people, you know, like-minded friends trying to, you know, get together and start running, but now you're actually building a community through Parkdale.
Yeah. That takes me back to a few runs when, and I'm going to take it even further back to one of your first questions was like, what was the scene like back then?
Yep.
And I love that you introed, was it Toronto Olympic Club from what, I think you said 1994 or something like that. Like I had no idea they'd been around that long. But like those types of groups, even like the U of T track team and all of that, like that was the goal. I wanted that University of Toronto track sled, like singlet, just to be able to like,
really?
I thought that was the coolest thing. I never wanted to race track. Don't get me wrong. Like don't hear that in the wrong way. But like, I thought that was like that pinnacle thing in Toronto. I thought that was such a cool singlet. And to this day, I still think like, if you deserve to be wearing that, like you've got my respect on a different level. But you know, there was groups like Longboat that were doing their thing and still are, and, you know, doing their midnight run, and all groups we respected, but didn't see ourselves fitting into because we didn't call ourselves runners. And that might be our own story, but that's just, it was different. We were showing up in basketball shorts. We weren't showing up in, you know, split shorts. We just did things a little differently. So to answer your question, when I would look around and see who was in our group, and it was, you know, small business owners, entrepreneurs, people that owned restaurants and bars, like that was our people. Those are the people we were going out with afterwards. So it turned into that friend circle more than anything. Designers, like tons of nurses, like all the people that we were breaking bread with were coming out and running with us and kind of adding on to this little thing that we had created. So that's when that's when I realized it looked different than what the normal running traditional landscape was.
Yeah. And that's the important thing that I wanted to raise is that, you know, the track clubs or the Olympic clubs, like they're very special. They're specialized, right? Like, I don't think I can go. I mean, I don't think I can just show up and be like, "Hey, I'd like to join you." Like, they're grooming athletes, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I made the distinction at the top is that this is like a grassroots, you know, community building activity or venture, if you will, where anybody can show up, and then, you know, you have to think a little bit about, you know, leave no one behind and stuff like that, which means that no matter who shows up, and you know, you made it's a great thing that you mentioned before is that not everybody was a runner. Perfect, because then everyone comes from different experiences and different abilities, and it even helps further solidify the no person left behind, right? No runner left behind. And that's what I really, really think it's amazing is that. And again, not to say, you know, we bridge runners and stuff like that is a great reference, but you have this thing now that you're creating from scratch, and I don't think you even realize at the time it's now creating what we have today is this groundswell of run crews, and a lot of them probably borrow some of the same ideas from Parkdale or from Night Terrors or from I won't keep calling it tribe, we'll call it Cardia, and some of the others, because You know, yes, you guys started it, but you're still here today, right? It wasn't a fly by night. It's like you started something, but over the years, and 10 years we're talking, you've adapted, you've done different things, had different ideas, and now you're you could look back and say, wow, we did this.
Yeah. And you know what was really cool about that time is that when Night Terrors started, we were there running with them when they started. Like Amy, I've got photos of Amy and I at different like brand events from years and like, wow. And I still look back on and I'm like, man, that was a very different time. And it was very supportive. They would run with us. We would run with them. And we were kind of building a scene together. And you know, we weren't on competing nights. Like there was just this very unspoken, like we were doing it for, it's going to sound cliche, like doing it for the city, but we were doing it for a population of the city that saw, that felt at home within our groups. So, to see, you know, that evolve, to see what Heather's done with her group and so many others that have popped, like even things that, like you were saying, that have kind of spun off Parkdale, like what Mango and Mr. Hawaii did with Mocha, and like all these groups that have tried things and went so differently, what Steven did with Bond for the city, like it all comes from a similar energy. And like whether it what form it takes, to me it doesn't matter, because ultimately like it all started from that community, like rooted in the community for the community.
Yeah. And that's an interesting bit you brought up there, because I'm wondering, there might not be a specific thing that has changed, but why can't we have that now? It might be a controversial question, but the idea of when crews used to visit other crews, we've had guests on here that mentions that as well too, like Hawaii said he wants to be able to just pop over to X crew and just do a thing. Why do you think that doesn't resonate right now?
I think there, over the past few years, there's been an oversaturation. Mm. I couldn't even tell you all of the run crews, clubs, places to people, mm-hmm. places to run with in the city anymore. Whereas before, you could hold that all in the palm of your hand and it was easy to choose from. Now, and that's a gift and a curse, because now you don't have to come in from Oshawa. Like, one of our runners, Matt Geo, used to come in from Oshawa every Tuesday to run with us. And now, like, you've got groups like Town Barber that are running out of, like, those neck of the woods. And, like, there's spots in the East End. And, you know, there's... I was hearing about a spot uptown that, like, does crazy numbers. Like, Yorkdale up north that mm-hmm. way. So I think now there's just more options to choose from. And the other thing is, like, people took training seriously, and I think that really limits the access to community runs, because when you come out on a Tuesday with Parkdale, I'm not asking you to come out and do your sprint workouts. You're like, don't set, if you want to lead out front, go, like, don't worry about the group. You just go and do what you need to do, because you're not here for the group. The same reason why we don't ask, like we ask people not to wear headphones. You're here to be a part of something and like bring people along with you and give back, and not just take for yourself and get in and get out.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, because I never thought of it that way, where it's almost like an accessibility thing now. It's not that you don't go to another group or you're repping more than another. It's more about which one's more convenient for me now, because there's choices or it works well with my work schedule. Another thing that I see stand out there at Parkdale is when you do have international outreach or there's travel involved and you do go to different spaces, like you know, as you said, Bridge Runners, I think that's what makes Parkdale Road Runners more recognizable if someone comes to visit the city, because they've gone beyond borders to then just access someone else's space and, you know, maybe bring back some of the good stuff from each crew itself. So obviously that helps to be recognized with different crews and brands. But tell me how an actual event or organization like Take the Bridge gets to Toronto.
That was honestly me building with Darcy, who she runs. She is one of the founders, runs it. And we realized it hadn't been done before. And right around the waterfront marathon is our anniversary. So just reaching out, saying we want to do this, connecting her with Justin Close, one of our captains who does all of our graphics. And, you know, the beauty thing about Take the Bridge is she and her team handle the logistics. And, you know, that's where the collaboration comes in. We would send her routes. This is what we think. She would make the trip up, be like, no, this is the one. You guys need to think of it in a different way. And we would go back and forth, and it became that truly collaborative thing. But for us, it was always like, what hasn't the city seen? So Take the Bridge was a perfect one. Our Nuit Blanche scrambles. Nobody was doing things like that. These like unsanctioned, and going back to that subculture piece I mentioned at the beginning, like Stephen was a bike courier. I used to volunteer at the Alley Cat scrambles back in the 90s. So we knew what the city, what you could do within the city, unsanctioned, illegally, however you want to say it, and how much fun those things are. So to for us to like take pieces of that and bring it into the run community and like repackage it was a lot of fun, because that means now we get to work with artists. We get to work with organizers of Nuit Blanche who would give us locations in advance. And we could really create this, a different type of energy while the city is buzzing. So a lot of those little unsanctioned races and things like that was already things we were doing. And then taking note of what Take the Bridge was doing on a much more organized level, only made sense for us to do right around the marathon time. So it's just, it was really just keeping an eye out on like what's happening out there and what's needed for the city to experience something different.
Yeah. And Darcy is an unbelievable powerhouse of a community builder. I met her a few times in New York, and Matt Meyer, who's another amazing human. Just what they've done with Take the Bridge is really great. And Sid finished like second in, was it New York, I think?
It was Chicago.
Take the Bridge? Yes, thank you very much, Chicago. And she was kind of walking us through like the experience, and it was just amazing listening to her explain it. And I just love what they're doing with that. Hopefully they can we can bring that back.
I mean, I feel like, I'm not going to say Sid had the advantage coming from Toronto because she can run in the cold, but that race was so damn cold. I left partway through to go try and find hot chocolate. It was so cool. Like, hats off to her for her performance. And not knowing the city? Yeah. Yeah.
I love those crit things.
That's exactly it. And that was actually the first unsanctioned race. Well, I guess it's not completely unsanctioned, but like that first race that Stephen and I traveled for as a race was the Red Hook Crit in Brooklyn. And that's, you know, that's when, you know, you really start to, Instagram had already been popping off by then. You kind of knew who people were. I had already done a few trips down to New York to meet these guys. But like when the Chicago kids, the Go City, the 3-Run-2, the, all of them were showing up, plus all the New York people, like that's when running was fun, where people would start showing up at these events and like making our own little like mini type of bridge the gaps and forming bonds that made travel and accessing different cities throughout the world, especially the US, really easy for us, because that we had the cosign even for our people. Like you had, you were good where you went because of how we carried ourselves.
Yeah, that I could attest to that, because even where was I? We're in Berlin. Carolina, she runs with Partdale. So it was like 10 of us just showing up to Berlin and hanging out with Berlin Braves and craft runners, just mixing up with crews. Like that feeling you can't replicate without actually going somewhere else and seeing other runners in their space.
It's very true. And to be welcome into city with open arms, like, and that's a huge responsibility on both ends. Like, you know, if somebody from Dromo comes up to Toronto, like Mexico City, we have type of thing, you know, and that could be from anywhere. So that's the beauty of this, like the run community of like this crew culture, whatever you want to call it, like that's that, you know, there's that integrity there, and you know what you're, more times than not, you know what you're signing up for, and who, like, that person has the cosign and they're good money wherever they go.
Yeah, you just brought something up. So Dre asked earlier about, you know, crews getting together and the challenge now. But let me ask you a question. That's what we do anyway in a podcast. Bridge the gap. I remember when Bridge, it was like almost 5 years ago or so. I think Bridge the
Gap. This was going to be our 5 year anniversary this year. We had
5 years.
We had.
That was a, that was amazing. That was amazing seeing the crews come over. I think Danny Dark came in from London, and so many like people that now, like 10 years ago is different, but now even 5 years ago, when you're like, oh, I know that person. Oh my goodness. I know that crew leader. Like, walk us through kind of that experience, because PDR played a big role in that Bridge the Gap.
Yeah, that was the first and only one that has happened in Canada that was like the sanctioned Bridge the Gap, where we talked to Charlie, we had talked to Mike Says. They gave us the blessing to go ahead and helped us really organize that. And that, man, that's probably one of the best weekends, and tons of headache, don't get me wrong, but like to see that many runners converge onto Toronto under just like this lens of like, let's see your city, show us your city type of thing. And the crew really stepped up. Sydney Allen Ash did an amazing job with all of like the graphics and the booklet and all of like the little kind of maps to the city that we had done for runners. We had so many community partners be down to just like, here's coupons, here's whatever you need for these people to kind of see the city from our lens. Cool Tea was a great host. So we had a lot going on for us where it was, we were able to show people that kind of like passport to our, or the postcard to our city. And, so cool. And hats off to CRS. They were able to recognize an opportunity there and really open up that race, give us, work with us and not, I don't want to say against us. I don't think it would be work against us, but they really went out of their way to make it, as seamless as possible so that the runners in the city that were coming to the city were able to move through the expo, were able to like have Charlie on stage and hear from, you know, one of the godfathers of the crew movement, and really use that opportunity to help solidify the Bridge the Gap community at a gold standard event.
Yeah, I love it. And just to clarify, I messed up his name before. It is Charlie Dark of Rundown Crew.
It's Daddy Dark on Instagram. Believe me, yeah. I think a lot of people get that. Yeah.
So you might not appreciate, I don't know, maybe you'll appreciate this, I don't know. But when I ran through London Marathon, I don't even know, a year ago, maybe 2019, and you get close to downtown. There's one point where you run through Rundum Crew and the confetti cannons, and they're just, you think the spectators are like a 10, Rundum was like a 15.5 on the scale. It was just like off the charts. And the first thing I thought about, Mike, the first thing I thought about when I ran through that is, damn, this feels like Parkdale.
Yeah.
Just the vibes, just the way, like the cannons, the confetti, like, just everyone going absolutely bonkers, and Charlie like flag and my megaphone and going nuts. It felt like I was back in you know, one of the big races in Toronto. Is there some, like, are you like, I wasn't borrowing, but are you kind of like inspiring each other, like Rundum and Parkdale?
I mean, Charlie and I are very close friends. Like, we, when I think of probably the person who not only inspires me, but mentors me, and it definitely goes vice versa, but especially in a year like this of, you know, where is running community going? Luckily, we get to work together quite often, but even just in terms of friendship, like there is a common respect that we both know what we want to do and who we want to do it for. And so the idea share is not, it never comes from a place of ego. It's always, there's not a competition. Let me say that. It's always like, what can we do? Not bigger and better, but sometimes different. Like I was at that cheer squad that you ran through. I was there helping them make, cause they do an arts and crafts night before. And that's definitely something we took. Like, I won't lie. Like there's ways I'm like, oh, you guys have a full team that go out the night before and like plaster the course. Like, it's incredible. So I turned around and I was like, you know, talking to the captains, and we're like, how do we do this different? And they're like, we need a wacky inflatable arm man. And like, that was, yes. That was like something I hadn't seen Run Them do. And you know, we need our DJ on risers and things like that. So it's like, it is a bit of, I don't want to say competitive one-upmanship, but there is definitely inspiration from them, because I will honestly say I have never, ever in my life seen a cheer squad like that. Mind you, there's an asterisk. I have not been to Copenhagen, and I've heard that one is bananas. Really? Like people are getting arrested at that cheer station type shit. So I can't speak to it like to that side. And one day I hope to get there. But from what I have seen and what I've been a part of, Run Them, like I have never seen anything more impactful than that.
If anyone has seen like those like crazy intense like we'll call it football, soccer matches where like the flares are going up and like people are just going like bonkers and the rafters are like shaking and just like you see some of those on TV. That's kind of what it felt like running through Run Them in London. Like I don't care what you were feeling at that time, like you just, there's a jolt of energy that comes through you when you run through there, and it was just absolutely amazing. And they don't care if they know you or not. They were cheering every single runner on. It was just such an unbelievably inspiring thing.
For sure. And the numbers that come out, and like that's the race. I don't care if it's raining, if it's not, you have your sunglasses on because you're crying at some point in that race. Like it's wild to watch people go through there. And I just think they just have it set up. There's the church that fully supports them. They, you know, they've got their coffee, the drinks, the washroom. Like they have figured out a way to make it like their headquarters for that race, and it's a beautiful thing. And yeah, other thing, sorry, let me just finish this because this is something I haven't seen. is the whole crew stays until the very last person, which is usually the guy with the fridge on his back. Like I think I did an 8-hour shift there with them on the year that I went to cheer, and like voices hoarse, like we're ordering Domino's pizza because everybody's starving. Like it was wild. And that was the thing. Like Charlie's like, no, the race isn't over. And you wait for the street cleaners, and then you wait for the people that are still behind, like the street sweepers, and then you can go home. And that was like, that was the real eye opener for me. I'm like, you're not just about the rah-rah. You're there, like, you want everybody to have that same experience.
Yeah, that I think we've been, just how we were talking about earlier, that international experience, open your eyes and what you could take back home and then what they could be introduced to when they travel here. And kudos and hats off to you to be able to be doing the things, because I think a lot of even crews right now have lost direction on what they should be doing. They kind of just become dormant and don't do the things. And that's like the biggest thing for me is like, hey, yeah, host a race. There's no one telling you not to. And when I went to Berlin and I saw they pull up a flatbed trailer and they were on top of that in Speedos just cheering. So like when you talk about Copenhagen, I could imagine what they're doing there. But, you know, it's refreshing hearing from you because of that energy. And why I'm even bringing this up now is that we want that now. Like it's not like, hey, it used to be a thing. No, we want that now because I'm late to the game. Jonathan and I, you know, we started running with the same crew initially, but where's all that now? You know, do the things. Like that's my like preaching to all the other crews or just everyone in general. Partdale, I want to see those things again, kind of a thing. It'll generate so much more to introduce new runners to the space. But my question though is, even though that was just a massive statement, how about the passing of the torch? So an example would have been, cool, the cruise started, but I want to appoint some more run captain. Do you then seek out someone that with that energy, or they're excited to do, want to do something like that?
Yeah, I mean, this, as you said off the top, it takes a village. And within that, excuse me, there's people that are there to show up on a Tuesday, get their run in, see their people, and bounce. And then there's other people that want to do more. They want to volunteer. They want to contribute. They want to do root support. And we are there for all of it. Like, I'm not expecting anybody to do more than what they come out to do, with the exception of have respect. That's all I can. If we're going to open you, if we're going to welcome you with open arms, treat the crew with respect. And so when there are people that we can identify or that come up to us saying like, hey, how do we do more? And there, it happens quite a bit. We look for opportunities for them to step into. So perfect example, Carolina and Lisa just led a mural run for us just after the first lockdown when it got opened up. And we couldn't, the numbers were, there was a really great response. So they ended up doing 2 days in a row. And that was their way of like showing the crew what they do on their own time, because every Friday they run at lunch and they go look at different murals around the city. And, you know, for me, coming as like I mentioned, like the graffiti writer, still very much within like role within that community and circle of friends, I have my vision, and we could have been doing this for years and we didn't. And when they did it with research, with like they were schooling us on so much. And I was like, oh, you do it differently. And so that's like one of the humbling things for me is like, we might have been doing this for 10 years. It doesn't mean we're doing it right. And the people that do come in with fresh eyes, they can take from systems and processes that have been created, but make it their own and make it better than you can make it, because you know what you're used to knowing. And they can take it in any direction. So there's definitely always room for people. Again, I'm saying this in a time of COVID and whatever, but even in times of COVID, like, you know, what I'm seeing like Q and Anoke doing with all their volunteer work and things like that, like they are taking it in a different direction and inspiring us. And, you know, I was mentioning by the time this comes out, we will have launched a new collaboration that's all proceeds are going to food insecurity. And we're really working with shelters in different community centers in Toronto to provide meals. So I think if, as long as you're going back to, and Andre, I'm going to go back to what you had just mentioned before about just doing, like doing something, as long as you can kind of go back into your why of like, why you created this, why you actually started your run community. And if it's bigger than you, if it's bigger than your ego, you can tap into what needs to happen next. If it's just about you, then that's where you're going to stay. And be that as it may, that could be good enough for you. You know, you might get the recognition you want, whatever that looks like. But if it's bigger than you, that's where I see this is going to evolve and keep helping more people.
That's such a good point. Like, just even when you're in it, you get complacent. And just asking that why again could be that real thing that pushes you again. Because, you know, obviously someone will check out, or, you know, a run crew could be about just the numbers and the speed and, you know, adding more stuff on the board. And that's what I assumed Parkdale was initially. Now having a conversation with you, I'm seeing more of those actual other nuances that Parkdale puts out there. And I think that's just a great segue into what Jonathan wants to ask you next.
Yeah, so 10 years, we see like CLA doing the collab. Who did they have on here? They
had Rally too.
Rally was on here. So I know there's doing a lot of collab stuff and stuff to celebrate. I think that's pretty awesome that some of these, you know, big brands will come out and wanna help you kind of acknowledge your 10 years. And it's a pretty important thing, right? So like, what is that like? Like, what was that experience like?
There was highs and lows to it because we had such grand plans for 10 years. Like we had a 5-year anniversary of Bridge the Gap. We were going to do that all over again. We'd like CRS had backed us for what was going to happen. And even when the race, the marathon got canceled, we were going back into our unsanctioned. We were like, cool, we'll go back to our roots. And we had these really great things planned. And as it got closer to the date, we kept having to like check and adjust. And, you know, the beauty of it is that none of them, I feel, were bad ideas. So they will come up as soon as we're like, we can, you know, get our everything safe and we can get our people moving together again. I feel like you will see what our 10-year plans were. But the fact that we were able to work with CLE, I mean, they've had our back from the start, which is, you know, that says a lot for a Canadian company that when we started with them, they were tiny. And, you know, for them to be able to, you know, give us as close to full control as I could, like the only parameters, and it wasn't even a parameter. It was just going back and forth with like what would look best, not like, no, this isn't. It was like materials and things like that. Like Justin Close was able to design that hat to what came, like what was in his brain came out on that hat. And that was really cool to not be held back by anybody and really make something that we were both CLE and Parkdale were really proud of. And then the same with Rally, like those guys were just down for whatever, like, you guys want to put the copy on? Put the copy on the way you want to put the copy. Their graphic designer knows us well. You know, he lived on Brock and Queen for years. So like he knows, he was around with the mascot back in the day. So their chief brand officer. So like it was groups that we had relationship with. So it didn't feel forced to be able to do something and turn it around in a different way. And they were so down to be like, whatever it needs to look like is what it looks like. And so that said, I'm really proud of the way it came out because we got to hear a lot of those stories that we had forgot about and see the photos and look at some of like the charitable contributions in traveling through races and stuff that honestly, I was DMing people being like, yo, when was this? And they're like, you took the photo. but like, yep. There's been so much that's happened over the years that I just don't, I mean, there's reason for that as well.
Yeah. You can take a moment.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You can take a moment. I can hear you get choked up too. It's like, it's like coming up, it's coming up. You can take a moment. You can take a moment, but shout outs to CLE, Rally Beer. These are local brands that are doing things and still providing access, because we've always looked the South for different opportunities, but they're right here in our backyard, and shout out to them for recognizing.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say like those are two of many that have supported over the years. You think of all like the small businesses, the bars, the restaurants, like Sugo has had our back at carb load dinners for years. And, you know, it's really cool to be able to build community with people that have their own community, because then it's just that it's a perfect exchange.
And it's just, I just check in, and I think you sold out of all the shirts. You even reintroduced the I'd Rather Be Smoking shirt, but
there's another one coming, so
even at Rally Beer, like the geniuses, like the shadow, like the PDR, like kind of on the side, but the beer is called Park apostrophe D Ale. Parked Ale is genius, absolutely genius.
That's so good. I mean, Justin and I share a very similar dad humor, and or just like bad puns, however you want to call it. And when he mentioned that, I was like, oh, that's it. And I was like, I have no idea if they're going to understand this or go for it, or if they're just going to laugh us out of the room, but they were down. Like nobody questioned anything. And I'm again, another product I'm really proud that we did.
That's awesome.
And I don't know why we didn't do it sooner. And that's the thing, like some of these things that kick me, like even doing the I'd Rather Be Smoking, we haven't printed that in years. And the speed at which that sold out, the DMs about the beer, I'm like, people surprise me. And I think that just, it's a testament to what the group has provided to people over the year. Yeah.
It's a perfect timing, because had he had done any of that too early, he might have been not a right fit or been, you know, or it's not as organic. But I think everyone's rallying together right now. No, it's real. It's like that joke that started coming out again, our play on words. Talk to us a little bit about giving back. We touched on a little bit, obviously, you mentioned Sugo helping that space and what Quinton's doing, but in context of what Parkdale has done in the past, let's talk about a little bit of the give back bit.
Yeah, I mean, it started early with us, and I think a big portion of that is us having such a group of nurses that have been in the group. So we've been exposed to what needs are within, say, the healthcare system early on. And one of the first things we had done was we had raised money for a room within St. Joe's Hospital in the mental health ward for youth. And that was, we ran a relay race. We raised funds for it. We had the auctions. We did all of that. And there was an X amount of dollars that we knew we needed to get to. And it wasn't about putting a plaque on the wall. It was about making a difference and contributing to a hospital that's in our area that, you know, a lot of us have spent time at. So that was the first. And then another one, I mean, I don't think Matt will mind if I share this. It's he's pretty open about it on his Instagram, but his daughter was born very, very premature. And Ronald McDonald House helped him out a lot. As I mentioned earlier, he was coming in from Oshawa to run with us. And so when his daughter had to go to Sick Kids, they took care of him and his wife, Katie. And so when it was time to give back, that was Matt being like, look, like, what can we do in terms of a race that we can generate some funds and cook a dinner for Ronald McDonald House? And that happened for years. So there's a lot of examples like that where, you know, our ladies run was doing a lot with West Neighborhood House, and even getting young women running at the 5K distance for Scotia. So there was quite a few things over the years that it just, like I said, it taps back into the why. And if you're doing it for others, things like that are easier to do because it's bigger than yourself.
Yeah, and this is why I asked the question, because I wanted you to give you a platform to be able to just pull those nuggets out, because it could seem disingenuous if it was like just, you know, Instagram post to get clout. So just to be able to just articulate and just talk about these things that I wasn't even privy of, just like because we're aware that Parkdale gives back and do charity events, but not in an itemized way like that. And that speaks volume, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that will go further, and hopefully individuals that are listening to this that are in space and have professions or even the time and the means to be able to give back somehow can find a way to do that and do the same idea of asking the why. And it's a low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of different groups within the space that do it. So it's not like we're unique to it. And so to be able to find, like, who's doing it, like, what, and it doesn't have to be financial. It can be time. Or if you don't have the time, it can be a donation. Like, it could be, you know, I know Runners Academy every December, or even the Kickback, they just did a shoe drive and a book drive. Like, there's many different ways. Once you're ready for it, it's easy. It's easier to find who's doing what. And I think a lot of these groups are doing a lot of impactful work. And I hope it just spreads, because this is, I mean, the one thing where I think we're seeing right now is, especially when you, like, during COVID, and you see the amount of displaced people or people with food insecurity, like, there's a lot of people that need help in our own city, right?
Yeah, and as you just said just now about everyone giving back, like just this minute, Raleigh is doing a food drive.
Right?
Like right off the bat.
Right? And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, they did a cleanup of the Dawn. And yep. I saw that and, you know, and I love that. That brought me back to what we used to do on the rail path, a route we run probably more than most people like, because I always get feedback on making that route. But I think there's like, there's these things where it's like, it doesn't have to be this grandiose. You don't always need to get a room in a hospital, you know, paid for. It could be as simple as cleaning up your neighborhood. You know, so it varies, but again, back to that, like back to why you do this stuff.
Yep. Speaking of kind of why you do this stuff and the fact that you lasted 10 years, I know we talked a little bit about all the run crews that have popped up, and there's a lot, and we mentioned this in the past, and, you know, I think a lot of them, did they fulfill a need, like to your point, like, you know, Matt, you know, he'll still come out to PDR, but like if he wants to run local, he can, right? So because of that, you are seeing a lot of run crews pop up. And, you know, I don't know the life expectancy of some of these run crews. I noticed quite a few of them that have been around for a while, 5 years or so, and probably more. What's the secret? Like, how are you guys still here 10 years later? And then maybe this, you know, if I can ask, you know, a second part of that question, Mike, like, what's your advice to anyone that wants to start a run crew?
I mean, the secret and the advice is the same thing to me. It's consistency. It's making sure you're, whenever somebody wants to show up, that you're there for them. And that was something that Stephen and I hung our hat on for years until COVID, which was nine years plus, we had never missed a Tuesday. And that meant no matter what was happening in our lives, where we were traveling, there was always somebody to unlock the doors. And sometimes that's all you need, is just somebody to be there for you. Because you never know, especially with runners, I find you never know what anybody's going through. And you hear about it when you're sharing those kilometers together. So that was always the thing. If, like, there were places that I never went back to because I would show up and nobody was there on time. And I was like, cool, if I can be here and you're organizing it, then what, like, where are we going wrong? And that, like, that to me is the main thing. It's consistency. Things will pile on from there, and like what you can create from there, but it all stems from just opening the doors to somebody.
Yeah, and then that's an actual, not just a tip or a gem. It can be applied to every single thing you do, whatever the outreach is. You know, if you come back every year and then give to the same charity, it's that consistency again. So it can be applied in multiple spaces. So that's really, really good advice. And I think I want to just ask you directly, what else would you like to share? Because we don't know every single thing that's been going on in that space. But if you just have some little item you want to say or something you want to give us a preview on, you have anything else to share?
I mean, it's a very interesting time with us not knowing when we can actually come back together as a group. So there's the plans in the works that I don't want to hold anything a secret, but they're not ready to be there because there's just, it's not ready. But I would say, like, keep an eye on, we're not going to close down the fundraising that we're doing with the Marinara Boys. So keep an eye on their Instagram, because that is directly going to be impacting our community that we run in, and that's all over Toronto. So that's the big one for me right now is like, we might not be able to move together, but we can use our resources, our platform, even just like, even if you can't donate, raising awareness to what's going on, is going to be massive, because that's where I see we can make impact in the city is for others right now, if we can't do it for ourselves as a group.
Mike, You've been so generous with your time, and it's really great to hear kind of your perspective on how things started for you guys, and how you're still here 10 years later, and even with now the last year being especially unfortunately to come on your 10th anniversary, which is it's not amazing. But you know what? There's going to be another 10 years to celebrate everything that you guys are doing. So thanks for giving us the time here and kind of walking us down the path of kind of how Parkdale started. It's been a real treat having you on here. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thank you, guys. I mean, ultimately, the reason I love things like this is we learn so much from each other. And maybe that's like that last nugget I can give is like I heard Knox Robinson years ago say like there's no point in holding on to knowledge. And so if there's, you know, the reason I love listening to podcasts is to hear where people have gone right and gone wrong. And I, you know, if anybody can take from this and build or see what we haven't done right and adjust, by all means, if it makes the community a better place, I'm more than happy to share. So thank you for giving me that.
With that being said, this is the Longest Ride Podcast.
Peace.
Peace. Hey, to all our listeners, thank you for taking the time out to listen to the Longest Ride Podcast. For our first season, we've dove into just getting to know what podcasting is. My co-host and I, Jonathan, thank you for spending time with us. And we have so much more exciting things to be done for season two next year. And that, with that being said, this is the Longest Ride Podcast.